For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Warning. The Outsider's Edge contains strong opinions, unconventional views, and contrarian stances. Listen, if you dare.
Hey, yo.
I'm going to be honest with y'all. I don't really feel like doing the intro tonight because I'm really fucking pissed off. So welcome to the Outsider's Edge. No, this is the show. I'm fucking opening the goddamn show.
Fuck the intro. Normally you do a countdown.
We're quiet long enough. I'm Rance, a.k.a. Ray Cash. I got Kyle. I got Carl. Let's get to the shits because I'm pretty fucking pissed off. How y'all doing? You're pissed off too. So let's get to the shits. I'm not happy.
Same.
Well, I got a question for you, Brother Rance.
Yes, sir.
So, like, how are you a company that has posted record revenue for, what, 3 years in a row? And has
longer than that, but sure.
And has just posted, like, your highest profit in, like, company history? Mm-hmm. And you just signed another $1 billion OTT streaming deal, but you got to make budget cuts.
Yeah, man, you got to keep those corporate vacations and third houses. You got to keep them. Got to keep them paid for some kind of way. Right?
Okay, you got to pay Nick Khan $12.5 million.
Okay, and
he might be worth that shit for the record.
And before we even get into the who, I am not one to ever advocate for anyone to lose their job because it's fucked up and, like, you know, workers of the world unite, fuck capitalism. But, like, Patrick is still employed.
We don't know. Theory. For the record, we don't know if Patrick's still employed or not. To be honest, we don't know. Lars Sullivan got released on the hush. Dream might have been released. But I feel, yes, your point is true. There are a lot of people who have done some shitty things that are still there.
Like, You kept Matt Riddle, but you got rid of Billy Kay?
I'm going to shut up because I don't want to piss you off, but that makes
sense. No, it makes sense from Matt Riddle's a better wrestler standpoint.
He's a better draw. He's a bigger draw, too.
It makes sense from a Matt Riddle is a shitty person who doesn't deserve that job standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
So here's the thing about that, and I think it's the one thing that I hate it. Like, all this, I hate all this. The one thing that sucks about this in my head, Riddle is a great example, I think, because we have to kind of understand that, like, a lot of people aren't on Twitter, right? Not everybody knows about Matt Riddle's issues or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so he's still getting cheered on television and stuff because they don't know. They just see, oh, this is Matt Riddle. He's a great wrestler. He's entertaining to me. And so someone like him, if you don't know, you just don't know. And so someone in his scenario, I always liken it. Now, granted, he got booed at WrestleMania, but I liken it.
But WrestleMania is a smart crowd. We can never gauge anything by what happened at Mania. because Mania is your smarkiest of smart crowds.
Sure.
There's not a dude. The only people at Mania who are not plugged into wrestling social media are the children.
Right. But I liken that scenario to someone like Hulk Hogan. We know he's a terrible human being. But I mean, I know, I mean, yes, exactly. Blah. We know he's awful. But let's face facts. If you go to most cities and you bring him out, he's going to get a pop. Yeah. And so WWE is going to pay him however much they paid him to make Titus uncomfortable for 3 hours. And, you know, like that. So it's one of those things where it's like, from that perspective, you get it, right? But when you're plugged in like we are, it's like, really? Velveteen Dream is still there, maybe? I mean, you know what I mean.
Let's break this down structurally, because we kind of started hot, and that's my fault. But for those of you who don't know, we record this show with Thursday nights, and today, for the second year in a row...
On the exact same day. How fucking tone deaf.
Yes. On the same day as last year, WWE made their annual budget cuts that weren't annual for years and now we're annual again, apparently.
Black
even
Thursday.
Though we're posting record profits.
As of now, and mind you, it's still been going on recently because about an hour or so ago, Mojo got released. But as of now, the list is Samoa Joe, Billy Kay, Peyton Royce, who else we got? Bo Dallas, Chelsea Green, Mickie James, Kalisto, Tucker, Wesley Blake, Mojo Rawley. I think that's the whole list as of right now. And there's a whole myriad of feelings. I'm not happy. I'm clearly, you know that. I started the show that way. But I do want to kind of break down some of the whys and some of the hot takes we feel. First off, fuck WWE, period. Pause. Next paragraph. I think it is abhorrent the way these people are released. And not so much the way these people are released, because releases are going to happen. My issue is that the people that they released, with all respect to people like Bo and Tucker, right? Respect to them, but they weren't doing anything anyway.
No, but so I have to say about Tucker, I saw a take on him that I really think, you know, has some merit in terms of I would be salty if I were him. Okay. But we'll come back to that.
So many of the people on these lists, the problem with why they got released and why so many people are up in arms is because WWE either put them in bad situations, WWE either took them out of good situations, or wouldn't allow them to be in the situations they had earned to be in. And so this isn't trimming the fat like they used to in past years. This is releasing people who were contributing or could contribute.
Billy Kay wrestled on WrestleMania, and Samoa Joe is one of the lead commentators.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, so that brings me to the take that I saw on Tucker, like, and why I would be mildly salty if I were Tucker, like, not fully, like, obviously Tucker feels great about it because his exact tweet to the news of his release was freedom. But, like, you're in a tag team that has gotten over, and your partner happens to be the super charismatic one that catches Vince's eye. So they give him the Money in the Bank briefcase, and they decide to break up the tag team. Only to, within a couple of months, realize that Otis, oh no, he needs to be a tag team guy. Let's put him back in a tag team, only we're going to put him in a tag team with Gable because he's more charismatic than you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's like, if I'm Tucker, I'm just like, so wait a minute. I was in a tag team that worked and we got over and you were fine with that to the point that you gave my partner this briefcase and then put him back in a tag team with someone else, but had nothing for me to do.
So I go ahead.
No, please.
I was just going to say, like, I want to focus, like, I personally, like you said, some people are going to get released, non-contributors. Last year, you saw, like, the Colognes were released, I believe. No Way Jose, like, wasn't doing much, really. Some guys like that. And we understand that this is part of it. People don't last in the WWE forever, and that's what it is. But the three, to me, there's three that are, like, you look at these three and you're like, okay, this is strange. Samoa Joe is the first one, and I think that's part of that is because I don't think he's the most egregious personally, because I think it was a situation where it sounds like they weren't going to clear him to wrestle. He wanted to wrestle.
Yeah.
Let him go, right?
The two most egregious. It's the most egregious, though, from the standpoint of, like, you're right. That's what happened, I think. And so, like, from that standpoint, all right, it's mutual. Do you? But it's egregious from the standpoint of, that man is too valuable an asset to let him.
Yeah, like, they let a very talented. All of the things that
he can do in terms of teaching promo and teaching ring work, and he's one of the best. He is one of the best performers of his generation, generation that includes Cena and Batista and Lesnar, because he's from that same generation.
Right. So yeah, that that is like, that's one. But I personally think the two most egregious ones are Peyton Royce and Billy Kay. And the main reason I think that is because, one, they were a tag team that was successful in a tag team division where you didn't have very many established tag teams. And they worked together very well. Yeah. And so they split them up. Fine, you split them up. So in your head, you're thinking, okay, you're splitting them up. They're going to do something with them, right? And they don't really do anything. They put Peyton Royce in a tag team again. And then Billy Kay, they do the resume thing. And to me, that's why I think Billy Kay is the most egregious one, because she's the one that is like, her limited screen time was always used up perfectly. She made it work. She made it entertaining. I can tell you, I've said it before. Sometimes my favorite parts of SmackDown, outside of maybe like Roman Reigns, was Billy Kay showing up and running her mouth about it.
I'm going to miss her on commentary. I'm going to miss her on commentary so much.
What happened here? You know, where you like, and I'm not trying to crap on any of the other guys. There are a lot of people that aren't getting used right now that it's like, okay, you're not even using these guys. Why are they still here? And yet you're moving away from people that, even if they're getting limited time, they're being used, you know? Well, I mean,
what also gets me, you know, I watched Raw on Monday. I actually watched it. And with all these people not being used, what gets me, I'm watching Raw, I'm like, this is a 3-hour show, and you've just thrown so many, like, video packages and promo packages and replays of things and rehashes of things that you've done before. And I'm just like, you've got all these people that you're not using. You could use, like, not even all of them, but you could use, like, 3 of these people in, like, a match and one extra segment that, like, has meaning and value and would make your 3-hour show that is a chore to watch. Like, I watched it and my DVR was fucked up, so I couldn't fast forward through anything. And I was just like, man, like, this is a long ass show. And it feels so much longer with all that filler. And I'm like, you've got all of these people on your roster. You do not need all this filler. Some filler is inevitable, but this much filler, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think a big part of the reason Monday's show was the way it was, though, is because traditionally they book the night after Monday night, the Raw after WrestleMania, a certain way. But they couldn't, because there's no fans. So then they kind of wanted to reset in a way, but couldn't the way they wanted to, and that's on them to figure out a way to do it right. But I feel you coming from. But like, you brought up Billy Kay and Peyton Royce, and for a person that's just been on WrestleMania and then be cut and in the middle of a storyline is just ridiculous. But I think we should also throw, everybody has a legit claim to be upset on that list, but I think another two are Mickie James and Chelsea Green. Chelsea Green specifically, I really feel for, because she almost got
getting hurt.
Well, but even going further than that, she almost got Brody Lee-esque sticked around in the fact that she was in a hot storyline in NXT and then got pulled from the storyline and got pulled off NXT because she was getting called up and didn't get called up or didn't get used for 6 months to a year. She gets called up, finally makes a big debut and breaks her wrist. Happens. And then she, of course, off TV for rehab. And once she gets cleared, again, it's another 6 months to a year she's not used, and then she's cut. And it's just like, people can't do anything if you don't allow them to, and if you're gonna take them out of such bad situations, and then not even let them get back in a good situation, like Mickey James, if you're gonna rehire her with the resume she has, and you're not gonna use her, I don't expect her to be world champion. I don't expect her to be in big and major storylines, but to not use her, it's egregious.
Especially when you consider. All the fucking injuries that the Raw women's division specifically has dealt with
over the past 3-4 months, yeah.
Over the past several months, during which time Mickey was completely fucking healthy. And yeah. It's just like, okay, so Lacey gets pregnant. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay, Lacey got pregnant. It happens. All right, she's out. Becky was pregnant and had a baby. All right, cool. It happens. She's also out. Charlotte had gotten hurt, so she was out. And Kairi Sane decided to go back to Japan.
Like, Asuka got hurt. Asuka got her tooth kicked out of her mouth.
Well, and a big part of the reason Kairi Sane decided to go back to Japan is the same type of shit that we're talking about here, where it's just like, you're not using these people and they're healthy. It's one thing when you're not using someone because they're hurt or because you actually have a plan. Like, all right, we're going to take you out for like 5 months, but when we bring you back, this is what you're going to do. This is how we're going to push it. Like, we need to take you away for a little while so that they forget about you, and then we're going to bring you back, and it's going to be great. Yeah. But if it's just like, oh, no, we have nothing for you to do.
Oh, there's no, something like
for you to do.
With Mickey James, like, she's a shocker to me, too, because I when I look at Mickey, I see her. She was on the Raw roster. I see her as someone that could be valuable in the Natalya role, where how Natalya is on SmackDown, where she's kind of like, they put her in the ring a lot of times with younger people to kind of work them, and she's in a tag team and she's on TV, you know. Mickey's perfect for that. Like, that that's the perfect spot for someone like Mickey with all her talent and skills.
Teach them how to get used to the hard cam, teach them how to, like, you know, where you're gonna pose, when you're gonna do it, like, just those little nuances that a Hall of Famer like Mickey James knows. Like, it's mind-boggling to me some of the people that they weren't using. Like, how do you have this level of a talent on hand and not utilize them at all?
And I want to. There's an argument I've seen kind of circulating where it's like, you guys can't get mad about releases when you guys are always saying, well, they have too much talent anyway. And I kind of disagree because, one, the people, like, this happens in every company. People get released all the time, okay? It's not like WWE is the only company that does this. But, like we talked about earlier, you're talking about 5 hours of WWE programming every week. Not counting what, like, Main Event, not counting 205 Live, not counting NXT.
Yeah.
Like, you've got so much programming that, and I'm not saying you can find room for everybody. Do I think WWE has maybe they have too many people? Yeah, probably. I mean, I think most companies, I think AEW is in the same spot. They've just got too many people. You can't find places for everybody. But at the same time, like, it's just one of those deals where it's like, you have so much programming that even if you're not using them in the ring, there's so many other things you can do. They have all these stupid ass shows and stuff that they do. It's like, there are places for these people on the roster.
And over the last year, they've dictatorially, you know, hammered down and they took away the other revenue streams that the superstars had and took over them. Like, Oh, you guys aren't going to do cameos anymore, but we'll do cameos for you. Oh, yeah. Y'all aren't going to do streams anymore, but we'll let you set up a stream through us. Which is just to say, you've got all of these different ways that you're finding to make money off of your independent contractors, but you don't have anything for so many of them to do.
So, Let me argue the other side, because I fundamentally disagree with you, Carl. I am of the ilk that, and that's specifically directed to a certain group of fans. That's not a general statement. That's directed to a certain group of people. because there is a certain group of people that takes joy in the misery of others. There's a certain group of people that takes joy in, takes a perverted joy in these people getting released because it's hot. WWE is getting fucked over again. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So there is truth, I believe, to the fact so many people complain and bitch about what my guy isn't being used. I'm not talking about people on TV. I'm talking about the lowest of the lowest of the low that would never be used anyway. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, all due respect to the Ascension, but they're not even getting pushed on the indies.
Oh, no, I'll give you, well, no, he would be pushed on the indies, so it's not as good an example as the Ascension, but, like, I love Drew Gulak, but, like, I'm smart enough to know that there's no realistic world where a company like WWE is going to push
right.
Drew Gulak.
So there are people that are, so that are waiting for any single negative thing that comes in the news with the WWE headline on it to jump on it. And it's completely okay to want your favorite wrestlers or want wrestlers in general to be utilized regularly and correctly. That's fine. The issue I believe comes in when you specifically go out of your way to wait for these moments to say, told you so. Pieces of shit.
The gotcha moments, yeah.
Exactly. It's just, and that's the problem I have with it. Because in the same breath, fundamentally think about it, in the same breath, I'm going to complain that I'll even say in my tweets, you know what? Just release him so he can be used correctly. And he gets released. Oh, WWE sucks. They're horrible. You can't have it both ways.
Sure.
You can't have it both ways. Now, everybody has every right and should be angry today. Everybody. Two things can be true at the same time. Everybody should be angry and upset today. Simultaneously, there are people that are taking advantage of that anger just because it furthers their narrative. And I think that's the problem.
And I think there's a difference between the, like, oh, you're awful for releasing someone, and a reaction of, I mean, I feel like the company dropped the ball with so-and-so. Mm-hmm. I think those are different criticisms. Because, mm-hmm. like, I was... So, Rusev, at the time of his release, my opinions on Miro are very different from my opinions on Rusev. I want to clarify that up front before I go further. At the time that Rusev was released, my thought was, gosh, I feel like they dropped the ball with this dude. He was so fucking over, and they didn't do anything with how over he and Aiden Lana. English.
Oh, Aiden, yeah, Lana. Sorry.
Well, even Lana, like, like, trifecta had become, how over the whole Rusev Day thing had become. They never did anything with that. Like, they dropped the ball with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the same thing as saying, well, oh, fuck you for releasing him. No, like, releasing him was a good thing for him. Because at least if you're gonna be a like aimless mid-carter with nothing to do, at least be an aimless mid-carter with nothing to do and happy. And yeah, he is now happy and an aimless mid-carter with nothing to do.
Yeah, it goes both ways, and I sometimes I feel like we can be so stupid as a group because we feel like it has to be this or that. It can be both. You can be really fucking pissed off about what's happening because you want to see people succeed and you don't want to see people mistreated, and you can simultaneously be a dick who's using that to further a narrative that's bullshit. Works both ways.
Well, and in the case of like the Iconics, especially them specifically, I think with these releases, I always think to myself, I'm like, shit, I hope they get signed very quickly because I don't know what their citizenship status situation is. I don't know, genuinely.
Well, Peyton's fine because she's married. She's good.
But isn't she married to Spears? Is Spears a U.S. citizen? I know he is Canadian.
I think he has dual citizenship.
Does he have dual? So, I mean, I want to clarify.
That's a fair question.
Like, I want them to be here. I'm not asking that in a nasty way.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, my immediate instinct when they were released is, shit, I hope they get signed very, very quickly, because I do not know if they have citizenship, and if they don't have citizenship and their immigration status is tied directly to their employment with the WWE, then they need a new employer ASAP.
Get a new work visa. Yeah.
So my concern always falls on the lines of, will these guys find new homes in general? And I know that sounds like, oh, of course they will. They're wrestlers, right? But like, I look at someone like Billie Kay, and Billie Kay to me is perfect for WWE, but I don't necessarily think she's perfect for any other place, because she's not necessarily the greatest wrestler in the ring in the world. And a lot of these companies, that's their focus. Their focus isn't, oh, how great are you on the mic, or how entertaining are you as a performer? You know, Billie Kay worked perfectly in WWE because she's a sports entertainer. She's not necessarily what you call a wrestler. And so I worry, like, AEW, where would she fit if she went there? Or if she went to other places?
I think the best move, if they want to do it, and I mean, they might, because they are legitimately best friends, I think their best move is to go to Impact, because Impact has a women's tag division.
Agreed.
Right.
And so they could just both go to Impact and be a tag team for the women's tag division, where it doesn't necessarily matter that realistically Billy's an okay wrestler and Peyton's an slightly above average wrestler.
Right. And the Impact women's roster has the most character driven content in the women's division besides WWE-esque shows. So I think that's the perfect spot for them. I agree with you completely on that, Kyle.
Yeah.
See, I just once again, like, some guys are going to find homes, you know. Some people, like Samoa Joe, people are going to be knocking down his fucking door because he's Samoa fucking Joe, you would think, right? Some people, I always worry about some of these other guys. Like, I don't know about Tucker, you know what I mean? Like, and I don't I don't want people to not be out of work forever because it's hard.
I think,
you know,
Tucker will be fine. I think Tucker will be fine because he's a big guy and he can go. Like, big guys that can go generally find work.
Right.
So, like, I think he'll be okay. Of the people who got released, I legitimately think the person who's going to struggle the most to find work is Mojo. Of all of the people that got released, I think he will be the one that struggles the most.
Let me tell you why I disagree.
Go ahead.
You're right. He probably will struggle to find work in wrestling, but I don't think he wants to. I don't think he'll wrestle ever again. Mojo strikes me as a guy who's WWE or bust. And not saying he doesn't love wrestling, but his real life situation... His real life situation. This is a man with a master's degree, and he's best friends with one of the most famous athletes in the world. Yeah. He'll be fine.
Like, no, he's good for life. About him in that case.
So, right. So what I mean is, I don't think he'll struggle to find work because I don't think he'll look for it.
And I will be 100% clear. I have no problem admitting this on the show. A lot of my issues with today are emotionally driven. Like, these are people that I've connected, some of these people, especially the Iconics, especially, as a group that, like, I've connected with, people in my household I've connected with, and it's like, well, fuck, you know? So, of course, like, I'm not taking the logical standpoint to everything every single time. Sure. I would like to do that, you know, but in this situation, it's one of those days where it's a sad day for people that, I told my kids today that Billie Kay is no longer on TV, and they were like, what happened? You know, because it's you know, it's just one of those things. Like I said, Samoa Joe, and they're like, I know him from the video game because they ain't seen him wrestle. He's been on commentary for the last however long, you know. But
well, let's try to you know, put a little positivity out there. We like to be a positive show, and let's think about what are your thoughts on most logical landing spots for the aforementioned people. I mean, we already said the Iconics feel probably like Impact feels the best for them. I really think Chelsea Green should go to AEW. I think that
probably
she would fit. I think she fits with them. I really do. I feel like she fits. And I mean, Cody is already best friends with her. Are they married yet, or are they still engaged?
Still engaged.
Well, with her fiance. So like, yeah, I feel like that's just one of those matter of time situations there.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel about Samoa Joe, honestly.
If he gets cleared, I think he goes to Japan.
That's the move for him if he's completely healthy, but if he's not, If I'm Sinclair, nope. If I'm Sinclair, I give him the Marty Scurll deal. You can book, and if you want to throw a few matches in there, but you are the face, and you run this company. This is all yours. That's what I would do.
Joe is a businessman. Joe gonna make the right business decision for Samoa Joe. He don't give a fuck who it is.
And who gonna be mad at Joe for saying you're not going over tonight? You gonna be mad at Joe?
Nobody wants that smoke. Nobody wants that smoke.
But Joe would be real life Godzilla in Japan. So like, that's a move. That is a place that I would really
like
to see.
Are you kidding me? Like Joe versus Okada, Joe versus Shingo, like
Shingo
directly in my veins. Directly in my veins.
But I kind of don't want that because I want Joe to live a longer, prosperous life. So I don't know if I want that.
You're right.
Go ahead, keep going.
All right, so like, who's next? Tucker.
I'll tell you what I would do if I was Tucker. You've seen a lot of the more prominent releases that didn't go to another company immediately. They did the grand tour of all the indies and it raised their profile. If I'm Tucker, I'm doing the tour of the indies and I'm going to raise my profile because you're always going to be the WWE castoff that wasn't good enough for Otis's tag partner. But if you go out here and you work these indies, and you show them you're a guy that can...
And remind people that you can go, because Tucker can go.
His nickname is All Night Tucker Knight, because he has a motor that's crazy for a guy his size. But I think I'd like to see him end up in a place like MLW, where he can really be utilized.
All right. Who else do we have?
Kalisto going back to Mexico to CML AAA, or do you think he goes to AEW?
He's going to go to AEW, but you know what? You know what?
Go to New Japan.
Kalisto versus Fenix will be great. Or, yeah, go to New Japan, because I'd honestly be there for... I'd be here for Kalisto versus Hiromu. Kalisto versus Ishimori.
And they got a history of luchadors there, because Dragon Lee was the guy that... Dragon Lee, right? That's his name?
Yeah, Dragon Lee.
That broke Hiromu's neck?
Yeah, well, and don't get it twisted. Like... Kalisto as a character was booty, but like Kalisto can go.
He can wrestle, but he's still booty.
Like, yeah, as a character, Kalisto booty.
Some like Mickey James, you would think probably maybe back to Impact, possibly.
No, can I have the perfect
or NWA where Nick join her husband.
You took it out of my mouth. NWA. Can you imagine the story of Mickey coming back to stay with her husband and the beef between her and Camille?
Can you
imagine what that could be?
That could get people talking about that.
I mean, when it inevitably leads to Mickey taking the title and Mickey and Nick having the belts as like a power couple.
I could get with that. I'm sure Nick is very excited about the potential of being able to bring his wife into the fold, you know?
Which means, Carl, that you're kind of right in terms of AEW because like they work with NWA.
They kind of work together. I mean, Thunder Rosa's been doing shit with them for a while.
No, Thunder Rosa, I think, is full-time AEW now.
Thunder Rosa's full-time AEW, but Serena Deeb is the NWA Women's Champion.
NWA Women's Champion.
Okay.
If I may take just a second, I want us to bring up Wesley Blake, but I want to say this. If I'm Wesley Blake, Jackson Riker, Steve Cutler, you motherfuckers got to see me.
Fight on site.
We're shooting the fair one, bro. Because both of you dudes, at separate times in my career, ruined my life. And y'all, you know, that man got his third baby on the way.
Y'all cost me my check.
Yeah,
y'all took me off TV twice.
You got to see me because I'm in the car right now. You got to see me.
And somehow those two assholes still have jobs.
No, Cutler don't.
Oh, Cutler got cut. Cutler got released.
Yeah, Cutler
got
cut.
Okay, it's Riker. That's right.
That's why.
Okay.
No, so like for those that don't know the sad story of Wesley Blake, first of all, Wesley Blake's first missed opportunity at a push was when WWE made the foolish choice to not keep Blake and Murphy as a tag team, because Blake and Murphy as a tag team was great shit. But anyway, floundered around for years. They finally put him with the Forgotten Sons with fuckhole Jackson Riker and Steve Cutler. And, you know, Jackson Riker's a MAGA douche. And Magadouche is going to Magadouche. And so he said some fucked up and repugnant shit because he's a fucked up, repugnant person. And so they had to take the Forgotten Sons off TV as soon as they debuted. And so Cutler and Blake, to their credit, go to management and are like, yo, what can we do? We are so sorry. Like, he does not speak for us. We don't know him.
Yep.
We only work with him because y'all asked us to. Like, what can we do? And so they finally give him something to do. They're going to be King Corbin's lackeys so that King Corbin can be even more dominant and blah, blah, blah. But then Steve Cutler going to fuck around and not worrying about the COVID.
Cutler and Deonna Purrazzo, who is his,
this COVID.
Yeah. Deonna Purrazzo is his girlfriend, and Steve and Deonna had a party. At New Year's. And this is, you guys might remember this because this is when the reports that Vince was getting Vince was getting pissed off at people about catching Rona because so many people kept catching it. And a lot of them got it from Steve Cutler's party. And that's what got him released. So twice they finally got back on TV and fucked over again.
So, yeah.
And
so,
Wesley, you know, Blake gets the worst of it because Riker is working with Elias, still has a job. And Cutler, at the very least, he's with Deonna, and she's the women's champion in Impact. So, like, she's doing fine. Like, Blake is the one getting most shit. That's, yeah, that's rough, man. I don't know where he lands, you know? I mean, that's, who knows?
I'll tell you where he lands. Back in WWE. He'll be back very soon.
That could be. I actually kind of feel the same way about Billie Kay. She's the one of any of them I could see coming back. As a matter of fact, she reminds me of when Drake Maverick got released.
I was going to say, if anybody's going to get the Drake Maverick treatment where, like, the entirety of social media is just like, yeah, so yep. SmackDown was fine and all, but needs more Billy Kay.
Yeah, the
power
of the internet.
Two things. One, just got a news alert. Mauro Ranallo is going to provide commentary for Rich Swann versus Kenny Omega at Impact Rebellion.
Wow, I want to watch it less.
Oh,
now.
So it's gonna scream.
But boys were tripping when they said I saw a tweet that said Mara was throwing chairs in his house because he couldn't say "Wake me up before you go-go." I was dying. The wrestler Anthony Ogogo. Mm-hmm. The second thing, real quick, is you guys talk about Billie Kay. I want to read Billie Kay just about an hour ago posted a note, and I want to read it to you guys.
Oh gosh, it's probably gonna make me cry, so I'm gonna mute myself.
Thank you, WWE, Vince McMahon, and Triple H for the past 6 years. They have fulfilled my dreams entirely from being a 10-year-old girl that fell in love with WWE from the moment I saw The Rock on TV. And now I'm walking away with so many incredible moments, from Super Showdown in front of my friends and family to winning the tag team championships at WrestleMania. Thank you to every single person in both locker rooms and everyone that I had the pleasure of working with behind the scenes, too. I love you all and will never forget your support and all the crazy stories we have together. I will miss you all so much. Thank you to all the fans for inviting me into your lives. I hope I made you smile and laugh. That's all I ever wanted to do. I'll never forget all the kind words and memories we've had together over the years. Thank you to my family for always supporting this crazy dream and sacrificing so much for me to achieve it. I honestly wouldn't have gotten to where I am without you all. You have my entire heart. And thank you to my life partner, Cassie. That's Peyton Royce's real name.
Peyton, yeah.
Our journey started together, and it's only fitting that it ends together. I love you. I'm beyond proud of you, and I'm with you forever. Lastly, thank you to everyone that reached out to me today. Knowing that I affected people's lives in a positive way means the absolute world to me, BK. That sounds like a woman who doesn't plan on wrestling for a while.
Yeah, I could see that for sure, yeah. Hell, she could probably do more than that. I mean, if we're being honest.
Billie Kay is fucking awesome. She can do anything she wants. And I bet you she's got plenty of options back home if she wants to go back home.
My God, yes.
She's got plenty of options.
Maybe not in the wrestling world, but she's definitely can be the face of somebody's company on TV. Absolutely.
She's just so endearing. How do you not love Billie?
She is. The only other person I don't think we've talked about is Bo Dallas, and I think Bo Dallas is probably done with wrestling. The Rotundas have a very strong relationship in history with the WWE, so I don't see him working for some indies. Maybe unless he just wants to just work a show in Florida. But, you know, my man's kind of transitioned to farm life now. So, that's not a joke.
Here's the thing. I won't rule it out entirely that he wrestles again because one thing people forget, Bo is like our age. Bo's like 32.
Very young, yes.
Something like that. Like, Bo is real fucking young. So, like, he could very easily, you know, pull like a Brock Lesnar or some shit and just be like, no, I'm going to do this farm shit for my early 30s. And then, like, when I'm, like, 38 or 39, I'll, like, go join my brother on some crazy shit.
Maybe. And he's still got that sweet, sweet Liv Morgan money coming in. So, you know.
But this is a good point. So, they good because they got a check coming in. Long story short, let's put a bow on this situation. I want to say, and we can go around the horn. I just want to say to the people released, we're here for you. We support you. Once these Pro Wrestling Tees stores start opening up, these guys are going to get fucking loaded. But I hate the situation implicitly and completely. I am very much a WWE diehard fan, and today I am disappointed to be a fan of the company. I get things have to happen. I get cuts have to happen. I get some of these people probably needed to be cut. But this feels crass, and this feels malicious. Because last year, I get it was more people last year and it was more of a shock. But last year had a level of understanding because nobody knew what the next 12 to 24 months would look like.
Yeah.
At the time it happened. Right now, we know what the future looks like. We're in a post-vaccinated world where, what is it, like 70 million people now in America have been vaccinated. We know what the outlook is going to look like.
We're on the right path.
Now. We're on the right path. We just had 50,000 fans in two nights of WrestleMania. So for y'all to do this, and I'm going to give it to y'all just one more thing. Stephanie McMahon failed her job today, and I feel it's important for me to say that because I said that about Brandy. I said that about so many other chief marketing and chief brand officers because it's her job to be in charge of these releases in public relations. WrestleMania week was 8-9 days long and was one of the best weeks we've had in wrestling in a long time. And literally the day after it's over, you cut 10 people? That's horrible. Well, that's horrible management.
Not only do you cut 10 people, but according to the reports, you make Johnny Ace do it when you literally just brought him back into the job.
Good point.
So, like, you just brought him back to his old position, and then you're just like, all right, I need you to just, like, let these 10 people.
Welcome back. Call these dudes and fire them.
Yeah, it's very, it reeks of everything that if you are, like, if you are against the man,
capitalism.
It reeks of it, bro.
Capitalism.
It reeks, and there's really not much else we can say. We pretty much covered it all in the last 45 minutes, you know, but I just think that all I hope for as a last word here to kind of put a positive spin is that they all find their place, their way, and that it works out, and we'll see them again on our TVs or somewhere sometime down the road.
Yeah, I will just say that I look forward to watching them in Impact or Ring of Honor or AEW because, you know, I don't watch Impact, but, like, I keep up with what's going on. And if I see people that I care about are doing cool shit, I'll tune in and watch them do cool shit. So
YouTube, like, is our friend.
Well, yeah, well, YouTube is our friend, and you and I talk about it all the time, Rance. We put our money where our mouth is. If a card looks good enough, we'll buy it. Or if the cause is good enough, we'll buy it.
We will. And as much as it pains me to say, we've even bought
we bought a Slammiversary one.
Listen.
We bought a Slammiversary.
If I hear that Billy Kay is going to be on TV somewhere, I will purchase that before I will purchase a Kenny Omega match.
Wow.
Just letting you know right now.
What if they're on the same card, Carl? What if they're on the same card?
Well, you know what? Then Kenny Omega, it's a good day for you, buddy.
All right. So, Thank you for making the moment a little better. We're going to take a quick break, take a commercial. We're going to come back and try to make some sense of all of this. While we're gone, go to ProWrestlingTees.com/thechairshot. Buy some shirts. Maybe that real cool hashtag journalism shirt that some random dudes on this random podcast came up with. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Go to powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT. Get your free month. Again, that's powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
So, that was a rough...
Listen to that ad. Carney yes. Journalism has to be supported somehow, y'all.
That was a rough first half of the show, but we're past it. We've moved past it. We've handled it, and now it's time to talk some other things that we kind of wanted to bring to the table. I think, in the vein of talking about Carl's favorite promotion, AEW, I think this is the part where we need to announce, because buried in the tragedy of today, AEW posted a 1.2 million rating.
Yeah, they fucking did.
That's huge. That's fantastic, and I don't want to give good news and then shit on it, but I am concerned. Can they keep it up? But nonetheless, fuck next week. Live in the moment. Right now, if you are an AEW fan or an AEW employee, you should be very proud.
And I think it makes perfect sense. Like, I think that they can get at least a million regularly at this point, because if you look at the audiences combined for Impact and NXT on a consistent and regular basis, it usually added up to between 1.4 and 1.6 million people.
Mm-hmm.
You could conservatively assume that, you know, a few hundred thousand of that 1.4 to 6 million people were crossover viewers like myself who would watch both shows. And so if you take those crossover viewers out, I'd still say you have a core audience of slightly over a million people who are conditioned to watch wrestling on Wednesday night, who will tune in to your product as long as you don't turn them off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, agreed. I think that's their next big challenge is, like, okay, so if you want to call it a ratings war, I don't call it that because, like, that's silly. But if you want to call it that and you want to say they won the ratings war, okay, fine, whatever. All right, so now your next challenge is, can you avoid alienating this new fan base? Because I've seen positive feedback and negative feedback online from first-time Dynamite viewers from last week's show. I saw people saying things like, tonight's the first night that I really gave it a full shot, and whatever this is, it's not for me. And I saw people saying things like, this is the first time I've really seen it. This is pretty cool. I'll tune in next week.
So I think that for AEW, and this is kind of, it's essentially the same thing, I think, that you kind of said. I think the next big challenge for them, to me, is bringing in more casual fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know now what you have. You already had your 600,000 to 800,000 per week group anyway. NXT goes to Tuesdays, and you've gained some from that because, like you said, crossovers. Now you can watch both shows on different nights. So you gained
the fact that you have an audience in NXT's old audience. You have an audience of people that are now conditioned. Oh, there's wrestling on Wednesday night. There's wrestling on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. I know at 8 o'clock on Wednesday I can watch a wrestling show.
Right.
And they tune to USA. It's not there. Well, Let me flip. See, I told you there was wrestling on Wednesday night.
So I think now their big challenge is, how do they draw more? Because if you think about it, they have always said who they are and what they want to be. This is what we want to be. We want to be this. And when you box yourself in like that, you're saying, okay, well, this is who we are, and you just kind of have to accept it. Well, if you want to draw a bigger rating, if you want to draw more people into the product, more casual fans, someone like me, I don't watch. If you want to bring, I'm not saying they're appeal to Carl, I don't give a shit, but you know what I mean. Like, if they want to bring more casual fans in, they're going to, like, how do they approach that now? Do they change the way they go about their show right now? Do they do different things? Do they try and make it, are they going to lean more into that sports entertainment side, or are they going to stay more, we're wrestling, this is what we are, blah, 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 blah. I think that's their next big challenge, is how do you bring more people in? Not so much people who already know about AEW. How do you bring in people who don't know?
Expand the brand.
I think their biggest weakness right now is that you almost have to keep up with everything in order to understand what's going on. They don't do a very good... Like, WWE's problem is they do too much replay. There's too many replays and video packages and, like, stuff that... rehashing things that we just saw, blah, blah, blah.
It's the whole insulting our intelligence argument to a degree. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we already know. We saw it. Like, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing. They go too far with it. AEW's issue is that they don't do enough actual recapping. They just take for granted that you are keeping up with all of the ancillary products. And the problem with that is, the problem with that becomes, if you are, I would consider myself a casual AEW fan. I watch Dynamite. I occasionally catch a Dark if, like, I have nothing to do and I need something to, like, turn on for a couple hours. But, like, I don't watch BTE because I hate the fucking Young Bucks. I haven't watched their new show. And so, like, it's not that I don't know what's happening on Dynamite. I have a general idea from week to week what's going on. But all of the extra detail and nuance and character building that BTE especially is responsible for, I don't get. And so it's just like, sometimes it just feels like out of nowhere, somebody new is being pushed or somebody new has, like, shown up. And it's just like, why is this person a big deal now? Where the fuck did this come from?
Well, speaking of pushing new people, I have two AEW topics I want to talk about that been pretty big over the past week or so. The first one is very recent. to give some backstory, Cody Rhodes and his Nightmare family were fractured. QT Marshall broke off from the Nightmare family and took his three top students.
Gave a really great promo.
Right.
Shitting on Cody, talking about like more like do everything for me.
Right. So he fractured off of the Nightmare family and took his three top students and started his own group. One of those three people is an Olympic boxer from England, Anthony Ogogo.
Medal winning Olympic boxer, y'all. Not just like made it is fucking impressive. I don't want to like try to I want to try to be careful how I word this. Like making an Olympic team makes you like pretty fucking impressive. Winning a fucking medal makes you the elite of the elite at what you do in your weight class.
Yeah.
And actually, full disclosure, he's actually their first developmental signee. Of the first guy that they signed that they trained to wrestle. He had his debut on Dynamite this week and won the match in relatively quick fashion.
With a gut punch, right?
He won the match with a blow to the body, which is being touted as a liver punch. Now,
I love that, by the way. I saw that and I was like,
can I break down? Well, go ahead. Shit, I can't even ask that question.
No, Rance, we want to go.
Well, you started talking about it. Go ahead.
No, I don't. That's all I saw. I don't know anything about it, clearly.
That's what I was going to ask about the point, but go ahead.
I mean, I was going to get into the controversy.
I was trying to, but I mean, y'all jumped into the topic before I could even bring the damn topic.
Well, I didn't know there was controversy. I just thought, oh, I like that. That was cool.
There was a lot of controversy about the punch. The selling of the punch, is the punch a legitimate finish? Things of that nature. And I was going to ask, what did y'all think about the punch? And where do you fall on it being a legitimate finish?
Okay, first of all, I'm going to give you one finish that negates any is this a legitimate finish argument for all time. The Cobra was a finish on television. All right? I don't want to hear shit about is anything a legitimate finish. Literally any move can be a finishing move.
This is true.
So, like, yes, it is a legitimate finish is the answer to the question. But, like, I saw, like, the heart of the commentary really gets down to this. Like, if you've ever been in an actual fight before and been punched in the stomach, like, you know a well-placed gut punch can put you down quick, fast, and in a fucking hurry. If they catch you at the right angle when you're not expecting it at the right velocity, that is it.
I think it gives legitimacy to something that they've been wanting to do and have talked about in the beginning, which is being a more sport-based kind of company. More fighting, like, you know what I mean? Like, they wanted to be more, like, fighting and actual, like, wrestling and sport-based and all this stuff. And I think a gut punch is a perfect example. For someone like me, who one of his favorite wrestlers in the world is Walter, you're winning me over with a gut punch, period. Like, if you make it look good, I thought the sell job was really good, too, because it was like, oh, shit, I've been punched in the gut. Time to fall over now. I'm done.
My only criticism of the entire spot, realistically, is the ref rung the bell too quickly. I think and I'm not even talking like he needed to wait 10 more seconds. I'm talking like, wait another like couple of clicks, you know, talk to him first, do something, and then call for the bell. No, he can't continue. This is done. Blah, 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 blah. Like it was just like a half second too quick. The other thing I would say, and this wasn't a problem for me. I thought the angle was great, and I buy the finish completely. But, like, if there's a problem with it, it's just that the camera angle gives away too much of how much he's pulling back. But he has to pull back. He's an Olympian. Yeah.
He's going to really hit him.
Right.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to disagree with you guys. I feel the exact opposite. For the record, your statement about legitimate finishers is absolutely true. Anything could be a legitimate finisher. I don't have a problem with his finish being a gut punch. My issue one of it was the cell. I think that was botched. But the biggest issue to me is we really take for granted our suspension of disbelief. Because so often people, a lot of the rhetoric about this was like, well, you believe in a guy who's undead and came back from the dead. Well, yes, but our suspension of disbelief is so much that they have explained to us what's happening. That this is canon and the scope of this world, right? So suspension of disbelief is something major. In the scope of AEW, the first match in the card was the Young Bucks versus Phoenix and Pac. And to see that match and all the flips and 15,000 super kicks and I shoot you from the top of the ceiling all the way down to the ground.
And Young Bucks having the caucasity to wrestle in Dior once.
The Young Chumps.
Sure. But to the point of the match, what I'm trying to make, for all of the flips and the things that they did in that match and they do all the time, and for there to be a million different things that could end any match, kicked out of it one, and things of that. And then to see later on, no matter how many credentials this guy has, one punch, and I'm going to look at the guy and he's done. The suspension of disbelief doesn't match. And that's the problem with it. That's my problem with it. It'll get better, I'm sure, because there was once upon a time when the full Nelson was a dumbass thing, and then Chris Masters took months and months to make it to a legitimate finish, and now Lashley won the world championship with it. So it's going to take time. Go ahead.
I have a follow-up question then, based on what you were just saying. Is some of the problem then more so card placement and like the way that they organize? Like, if you're going to introduce this new wrestler with this unconventional finish that we need to like kind of train the crowd to accept in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we don't need to lead with our like high spot tag team match. Maybe we should lead with something a little, not necessarily lower energy, but like maybe we lead with a Hangman match where like it's going to be more of a brawl and it'll end with a buckshot lariat. And like, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is more of a fight, and you're going to see it end with a fight-style finish so that when we now bring out our new guy who's going to end his match fight-style very quick, mm-hmm. at least you just watched a brawl, so like you're already in that brawl mindset. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe it's card placement.
That's a great question. And card placement is a problem that AEW's had over their tenure. And I think there's truth to that. But also, my retort is 95% of the roster wrestles that way. So it's not like it's just those guys happen to wrestle that type of match. The majority of the roster wrestles that high spot, kick out of 50,000 things, and it's over.
If the rumors are to be believed, the old guys are trying to tell them to not all be the exact same, and they're just not listening.
Well, let me ask you this. I don't know anything about this particular guy. This was his debut match, is what I'm
yes,
gaining from. Yes. Are we for sure that this is this guy's finish? Like, maybe he's an Olympian and they're going to use him to do many different ways to beat people because he's a fucking Olympian. You know what I mean? Like, and would that bother you more if the gut punch wasn't his finish and it was this guy can beat you in a plethora of different ways? Would that be more appealing to you in terms of suspension of disbelief, considering his skill set? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And again, it's another great question. I don't think it's his finish in terms of every match is going to finish with the gut punch. Sure. I don't think it's that. But it was the finish to the match. And if I remember correctly, the match didn't even last but 30 seconds. It was, hey, ding, 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 punch in the gut. It's over.
Right.
So the suspension of disbelief for me is hurt because I can believe anything you want me to believe if you tell me I should believe it. But it's really hard for me to believe. The reason why, and I'm not sticking up for WWE in any sense, I'm using them because that's the best analogy I have. The reason why on the same card you could have The Undertaker coming back from the dead, and then later on in the show, you got Too Cool dancing with the big Samoan dude in the thong, and then later on in the show you have Chris Benoit in a shoot match with Kurt Angle. The reason that all made sense and it worked was because every single part of that card was told to us and explained to us, this is what's canon for this person. This is what's canon for this company. And in AEW, literally nothing. Look at the what was the match with the fireworks that didn't go off, the death match.
Oh, the Omega and Moxley, yeah.
They almost killed each other in kayfabe, right? The next night, both of them wrestled. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, would be beneficial in this scenario? We talk all the time about how the one thing that AEW kind of struggles with a little bit is maybe like, we talked about it being recap, but maybe in general, put some vignettes together. You know, we're showing this guy, like, he beats people down. He gets people, that gut punch is deadly. Like, you show him in like a dumb ad, like Mr. Perfect, right? It was throw the football to yourself or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like for this guy, maybe it's like we saw him in some street fights or something and he's taking people out with a gut punch. And then you believe it to be, oh, well, this is what this guy does. This is his specialty per se. And that's why he's so good at it. Would that make it bridge that gap more for you and like with how that would work? Or,
and I'll jump in. I know you want to say something else, Kyle, but my answer to that is this. And this is less about Anthony Ogogo as a wrestler, and it's more about the entire structure of their show and the structure of their company, to me. Because the structure of their company is such that there is not a baseline understanding of what's believable to me. There's not a base, and even we're not even getting into depth, just baseline believability. The things that would end a normal match don't end matches in AEW. The things that would finish a match any other company, and I'm not talking about a WrestleMania or All Out, like a big pay-per-view, on a Wednesday, don't finish matches. And then you got a guy who's never wrestled before, who granted is a fantastic striker and a world-class boxer, but he has one punch, hits dude in the gut, and like Kyle said, the ref didn't even take the time to see, was he okay? Instantly he saw the punch, like, oh no, that's the end of the match. The suspension of disbelief was not built up enough for me personally to say, that made sense to me. And that's everything involved. That's the structure of the show, that's the card placement, that's the matches before it being flippy-do spot fest, that's the punch in general, that's the sell, that's the ref, that's everything involved. All of it works together for me to believe something, right? So, and it's not just me, but I know I'm on the lesser end of this. And I'm not against Anthony Ogogo, and I'm not against strikes, finishing matches, because again, I love Walter just like you do. But I thought it was an interesting dichotomy, interesting things to see, because it really got the internet ablaze today.
How do you think that pertains to like the way AEW caters to its hardcore fan base? Because like when I hear you talk about that, what I think in my head is, okay, well, first of all, the guys who book AEW are also the guys who wrestle in AEW. And so one thing about what comes with that is it's like, okay, you should just like, I feel like, and you correct me if I'm wrong, guys, it's perfectly fine, that they want you to accept things as they are just because you should already know. Like someone like, you know, Kenny Omega, right? Like his finisher, nobody ever kicks out, right? And even if you've never watched Kenny Omega, like, let's say, like, I've never watched Kenny Omega, right? Let's just say I haven't.
Great point.
And I see that, and I'm like, oh, okay. Well, they're like, well, you just know, because this is the way, like, he's Kenny Omega. Like, yes. You know, he always wins with this. Like, is there maybe some credence to the idea of the way they book their guys where it's like, we're booking for hardcores. You know, we're not booking for casuals. And so when a casual walks in and they watch it, they're like, well, why did he win with that? What was so special about that gut punch? I just saw this other match before where the guys were doing 8,000 flips and it took forever to win, or all these different, you know what I mean? So I wonder if maybe that plays a role into how they're presenting their guys and what we should and shouldn't believe.
Well, that was Kyle's earlier point.
Was I hope that... not. I hope I didn't take it from him.
No. You're continuing to make it. Is that there is no explanation. And you brought up something that I never thought about that is a legitimate thing. when AEW started, the main people who were there, we just were expected to know who they were and what they did. They never explained to the crowd who Kenny Omega is and why he's popular. They never explained to the crowd who the Young Bucks are and why they're popular. They never did any of that. It's just, oh, well, if you know, you know. And if you don't, figure it out. So you got a guy like a Go-Go who, if we're honest, a Go-Go isn't a guy that you would think would be in their company.
I have no idea who that was. Me personally, no clue.
But I'm just saying, everything about AEW, does a real life Olympian seem like a guy that would want to sign for AEW?
No. So, I don't think of any Olympian that wants to be in a carny business. And if I do think of that, I think they're going to show me why, who they are ahead of time. What makes them special? You know what I mean?
They're too busy sucking their own dicks. And like in the case of the not so young Bucks, like setting up new Twitter accounts just so that they can be trolls.
That is another thing. Did you want to talk about the trolling interview real quick? The business. You want to talk about the interview real quick? Because the other thing I wanted to hit is the faction thing. So you want to bring up the interview?
So they did this interview. Who was the interview with? Because I would like to give credit where it's due.
Who was the interview with? I'll find that out while you talk.
So they did an interview recently, and they were asked about, you know, first of all, they were asked about people's objection to all of the factions. And they brought up how factions have worked for New Japan for years, which is valid, and that's very much true. And how factions make it easier for them to get more people on TV and for them to create matchups, because if you've got a bunch of people in factions, then all you need to know is Carl is in one faction and Rance is in another faction and the factions have beef, so boom, we've got a matchup. And if you're on your own, well, then that just makes it a lot harder for us to, like, come up with stuff for you. And I thought to myself, ooh, it's probably not a good look if you're the EVPs and you're admitting that you don't know quite how to book people who aren't part of a unit. That's not something I would say out loud. But I digress. The other thing that they said in the interview that really pissed me off was in regards to the fans and how fans are fickle and they're the worst, which they are. Like, that's true. Absolutely. Fans are fickle and fans are the worst. We say it on our show all the fucking time. But I'm just like, y'all are the biggest fucking trolls out there. But as soon as anybody launches any kind of criticism of y'all at all, y'all shut the shit down and freak the fuck out and overreact and go out of your way to respond to it and vanity surge. And I'm just like, y'all are millionaires. Like, why? Why are you wasting your fucking time? Y'all are millionaires. You own a televised company.
Yeah, they're the young Trumps, the thin-skinned white millionaires. Yeah.
For the record, the interview was with Scott Fishman from the TV Insider.
All right, okay. Boom. There we go.
So I'd like to, I just want to read some information to you guys real quick. Because the faction talk, I don't think people understand how many fucking factions they have. I'm gonna list.
It's a lot.
We have Team Taz, led by Taz, of course, who's the leader. Brian Cage, Powerhouse Hobbs, Ricky Starks,
and the real star of yes, Team sir. Taz, Hook.
Damn right. Then we have the Inner Circle. Damn. Hold on, y'all. The fucking website crashed.
Well, then the inner circle is Sammy Guevara, Proud and Powerful, Jake Hager, and Chris Jericho.
Okay. Then we have the Pinnacle. And that is
one.
Right. And of course, that's MJF, Wardlow, Super Mega Hill, Sean Spears, FTR,
Pop,
and Tully Blanchard. You have the Dark Order. Rest in peace to Brody Lee. Of course, their leader now is minus one, Brody Lee Jr. But of course, they have Evil Uno, Stu Grayson, Alex Reynolds, John Silver, Allen Five Angels, Cole Cabana, Anna Jay is hurt right now.
And kind of Tay Conti? Kind of? Because she's like been loosely affiliating with them since her and Anna Jay are besties.
And Preston Vance, yes. Then we have the Nightmare Family. That's Cody with Dustin and Brandy, Arn Anderson, who is their head coach, Lee Johnson, and the Gun Club, Billy and his two sons, Austin and Colton. Now we have QT Marshall's new faction with QT Marshall, Aaron Solo, Nick Komoroto, and the guy we just spoke about, Anthony Gogo. Now we have the Super Elite. That's Kenny Omega with Don Callis, Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson, and apparently, and the Young Bucks now,
of course.
And this has Nakazawa listed because that's Kenny's best friend, maybe. I don't know. Then we have the Hardy Family Office.
Yep.
With Matt Hardy and Private Party, Isaiah Cassidy, and Mark Quinn, and Butcher, Blade, and the Bunny. Mm-hmm. And then we have smaller factions with your trios and whatnot, best friends. You have Trent, Chuck Taylor, Orange Cassidy, Sue, of course, because she's on the show,
And now Statlander. Because they just added her 2 weeks ago out of the fucking blue. Like, literally out of the blue. She came out with them to do a promo to the Pixies song because Tony Khan put out the money for Orange Cassidy to have Where's My Mind, apparently, as his theme. Which is a great song, but, like, super fucking random.
Then we have a new group called The Pretty Picture.
Thought we were done.
No, not even close. That's Peter Avalon, Cesar Bononi, Dolph Ziggler's little brother, Nick Nemeth, and now J.D. Drake.
No, Nick Nemeth is Dolph Ziggler, his little brother, Ryan.
Yes. Then we have the Death Triangle, and that's Pac
and the Lucha Bros.
Yeah. And we have the Jurassic Express.
Yep.
And that's Luchasaurus, that's Jungle Boy Jack Perry, and that's Marco Stunt. And now I'm finished. So, you've heard us mention all those factions. I understand. There were companies with a history of a lot of factions. But you don't think that's one too many, dog?
Well, so here's what makes it too many. The trios are treated as factions. Within New Japan, what makes the faction system work is at any given time, there's only ever, like, at max, five total factions within which everyone is affiliated with something. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you want to make a faction-based company, I mean, all right, you can do that, but you've got to trim the fat in the sense of, like, so right now, of the actual factions that they have, really they should have the Super Elite, the Hardy Family people, Dark Order, and
I don't even think the Hardy Family should be one. I think because you're forgetting Inner Circle and Pinnacle.
Oh, I am forgetting Inner Circle. So it should be Pinnacle, Dark Order, Inner Circle, Super Elite, and well, so that's four. Well, no, because I said at most five. So then you make the Hardys would be five.
But nothing no, about Taz. Them.
Oh, you're right. Team Taz is five.
And that's my problem with the Hardy Family. And that's my problem with most of their factions. They don't make sense. Literally, the Hardy Family group came together the Wednesday after the whatever pay-per-view it was, Revolution. Because if you remember, going back to Revolution, Eddie Kingston was with the Butcher, the Blade, the Bunny, and the Lucha Brothers. Lucha Brothers left to do their own thing because Pac came back, Death Triangle.
Here's the storyline for the Hardy. This is the storyline for the Hardy thing, if I'm remembering correctly. So you remember at Revolution, Matt Hardy's match with Hangman was for his earnings from the previous quarter. And Hangman wins the match and all of Matt Hardy's money. So I believe, I could be wrong, but I think the storyline was Matt's got to make this money back, so he signed more clients.
That's right.
And so he's got more talent now so that he can get more matches so that he can make back that big money, Matt. That's the storyline they want us to go with for that being a staple.
So, okay. I am very much like, I love factions. I'm team faction. However, your whole show can't be fucking factions. And like, I just don't think that works on a general level. Like, you need enough singles superstars, and maybe they have them, but at the same time, like, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the only singles superstars that are not affiliated with any faction at all, the only singles guys they have that are currently not in any way, shape, or form affiliated with the faction are Darby Allin, Christian Cage, Ethan Page, and Scorpio Sky.
Moxley. Okay.
Because even Hangman is loosely affiliated with the Dark Order. He's not part right. of the Dark Order, but he's very loosely affiliated. They're his buddies. Like, if Hangman needs to have a tag team partner for literally any reason, it's gonna be John Silver or Preston Vance or one of the Dark Order guys.
I think that it's very like, it's kind of, it just feels like overkill. Like, I'm not watching the show, obviously. Maybe I'd watch it and be like, oh yeah, fuck yeah, factions, 24/7. I don't know. But I think that one of the things that works about wrestling so well is that you have enough single superstars that can kind of, they don't need a faction. So Moxley is a great example. Like, I think, when I think of, like, factions all throughout wrestling, I think of, you know, like DX or whatever, but like Stone Cold Steve Austin was always one of those guys who never needed a faction. You know, he was, I'm Austin, I will kick your ass whether we are in a faction or not. And I think that more of those type of guys work, because at the end of the day, I always think that single superstars are what make companies thrive the best, in my personal opinion. So when you have this, and I love a faction, but when you have this many factions, it's like, where are you, who is the superstar that's going to come from this faction that isn't going to need it eventually at some point? Because otherwise it's just a bunch of guys hanging around, because if they didn't have a faction, they wouldn't be doing shit else. You know what I mean? And that to me is just, you might as well be on the WWE chopping block, you know, where, oh, well, they don't have anything else to do.
Well, and AEW is already seeing a problem that, like, even the fan base is actively already discussing this. Like, everybody knows the long-term move is Hangman's redemption arc, and he will eventually dethrone the evil Kenny Omega. Everybody knows that's where this is going. Like, that's just there. But the issue now is just like, okay, so when Kenny is done with the Moxley shit, what the fuck is there for him to do before it's time for Hangman? Like, who is there for him to face? Who have they built up? And it's like, you look at their roster, they've got plenty of talent, and they've got plenty of guys that are good. It's not that they don't have people that are good, but when I think about the people who are built and established, I'm just like, all right, well, you've got MJF in the middle of a faction feud with Jericho, which means both of them are out. The whole point is we're trying to avoid throwing you Hangman yet, because we want that to be at like a bigger show. You're just finished with Moxley. So it's like, what? Are we just going to throw Christian at you immediately? Because like, he's a big name. Are we going to finally have Cage turn on Team Taz, because that's where that's going? Because they're apparently turning Cage face.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that. I feel like
you guys know the in-depth storylines better than I do. So y'all have to tell me on that. I just know that like too many factions seems like overkill, just on the surface level in a vacuum.
I think so. I think it's a little ridiculous. I think it's lazy, but more importantly, I think it's more harmful than helpful, because the point of a faction is to get a guy over. That's the point of a faction. It's to get all the guys over and catapult one person to the next stratosphere. You can't do that if there's 15 factions. Who's getting put over? Who's getting catapulted?
Well, a great example, let's use the Inner Circle as our great example. What have we said from the beginning? Who was the Inner Circle really established to put over?
Sammy Guevara.
It was obvious to everyone from the jump. You've got the two recycled WWE guys, one of whom is an all-time great, like clearly here to put younger guys over, and the other of whom is Jack Swagger. Then you've got Santana and Ortiz, who are just an established badass tag team who want to be a badass tag team. The whole point of this faction is obviously we're trying to get Sammy over. And so you're like in the middle of doing that, and then you completely derail that to do the MJF thing. And then transition to this MJF versus Jericho faction war that's obviously designed to continue to get MJF even more over. And I'm just like, in the midst of all of this, Sammy is the forgotten one. Mm-hmm. So what is this accomplishing for him anymore? Because you were doing the right thing. You had MJF drive a wedge between them. And so then Sammy straight up leaves the inner circle and like, all right, this is good. This is perfect. All right, Sammy's breaking out. We've made him a bigger deal, blah, blah, blah. Oh, wait, no, now he's right back with the inner circle because the inner circle's back together again. Because reasons.
Yeah, and it's frustrating because there's so much good things that could be told, and the faction idea is always a good idea to use, but like any good idea, if you overdo it, it kills its luster, it kills its positivity, it kills what made it important in the first place if you overdo it. So that's AEW in a nutshell. One last thing I wanted to get with you guys was we kind of went backwards, but WrestleMania did just finish. Did you guys have any final thoughts on WrestleMania week besides the fact that WWE released 10 people for no goddamn reason?
Congrats to Bianca and Sasha on making history. That was really, really great match, and it was really, really touching and emotional on a lot of different levels. And that was really awesome. I didn't have a problem with night two. I didn't think night two was bad. I don't want to say that. I did not think night two was bad. I thought night one was better. I did not think night two was bad. I thought night one was better.
Yeah. I will say of the two nights, a lot of people are going to point to the triple threat main event being the match of the weekend, and that's totally fair. For me, it's Sasha and Bianca. When you throw in the history, the meaning, the importance, and just the emotional investment, I feel like, at least in my house, like we're all huge Bianca Belair fans in my house. Like I felt like the emotional investment from going from when Bianca won the Rumble carried over to when she won the title on Saturday was like the culmination of everything you hope for. We all were like, everyone in the house, we're watching. We're all like watching very like wide-eyed. And when she won, we're all cheering and happy. So my match of the weekend, I know a lot of people will say the triple threat main event. I'm going to say Bianca and Sasha. I really just, everything about it resonated to me. It was like what everything wrestling is supposed to be was that match for me. Outside of that, I mean, I really loved both nights. Night one was a little bit better. I would agree with you on that. But night two found its groove. I think it started off a little slow, but with the Fiend stuff, that was kind of strange for some people. And then you had the tag team titles, which was fine. But it really found its groove towards the end. The last five matches on that card, I thought, all perfect, acceptable. They did what they needed to do. They didn't go long. They got it all in. And, I really enjoyed it. It was nice to have the fans back in some capacity, and just hearing the emotions. I really felt great for Cesaro as another person that I thought had just a fantastic weekend, man. Like everything, it felt different. It felt good. And
I'm going to give you a different favorite match. You're right. Match of the weekend by default is Bianca and Sasha. Absolutely. My, sentimental match of the weekend, because it was a match I had no expectations for going in. Like, I wasn't against it, but I had no expectations going in, and it turned out to be awesome and fun as fuck. It was Bad Bunny and Damian Priest versus Miz and Morrison. Oh my God. Like, I was not against the match in any capacity going into it. I was just like, whatever, it'll be a celebrity match. Bad Bunny's going to get the win. It's fine, whatever. Nah, Bad Bunny came to play.
He did. And you know what? I think a lot of people, like, there's been a lot of praise passed around to him, and he deserves every 100% of everything he got. Miz and Morrison deserve. Miz is such a pro. Like, there's he made everything Bad Bunny did look like in hit, like he sold it, like he just got hit by a freight train. But also, I feel like so Damian Priest got lost in the shuffle. Like,
Morrison, say what? I was gonna say Miz did, and I've seen a lot of people give Miz those flowers, but I just want to point out, like, Morrison took Bad Bunny's Destroyer and Falcon Arrow. So, like,
he did.
Morrison was the one that sold both of his right. big high spots.
I was just gonna say, like, Damian Priest to me, he fell under a little under the radar just because of, you know, it's Bad Bunny, and then you got the Miz, right? But
you got the way that they, like, did absolutely nothing with him the following night on Raw.
Well, he was kind of like the liaison between everything. And it was his first Mania match, too. Like, we need to remember, I felt like they really, whatever they do with him afterwards is up to them. But Mania night, I felt like they made a potential superstar with someone like Damian, because he looked great, and he never tried to be in the spotlight when we knew it was mostly about Bad Bunny, right? Because it's a celebrity thing. It never felt like he tried to, like, overshadow anything. And, I mean, I think you're right, Kyle. I think it's one of the top, it was in my top five of the weekend was that match. I was very, very happily, I was very happy about it. Very surprised at how good it turned out. So,
because the sleeper matches are always the ones that, like I said at the beginning, I had no expectations going in. I was just like, this is a celebrity match. Like, my expectation is don't be trash. Like, that was like, just don't be trash. Whatever, don't be trash. And then I was like, wait a minute, is the celebrity the face in peril? Is this motherfucker gonna face in peril?
Yeah.
Oh my. He gonna take some off? Oh, he's gonna what? Did he just hit a? Oh, all right. Yeah, I'm here for this.
It was funny because we were watching, and my wife, she was like, man, Bad Bunny, he just looks so little out there. He's so little. He's at everything he does. It just looks like he's getting beat up really bad. And she's like, I was like, yeah, I told her. I was like, it's a face. He's the face in peril. Like, we've talked about this. We've discussed these things.
What's so funny is he looks so little, but I'm just like, Bad Bunny is normal person size.
Yeah,
this
he is.
What happens when somebody, this is what happens when somebody who's normal person size is in the ring with people who are like, holy shit size. Because Morrison might not be tall, but he's jacked as shit. And then Miz and Priest are both at least like 6'4".
Exactly. Yeah.
I think the match of the weekend was definitely the Reigns, Bryan, and Edge, but I think the moment was Bianca and Sasha.
Yeah, that's fair.
There's no diss to the match. The match is one of the best women's matches ever in WrestleMania history.
Yeah.
But what Roman, Edge, and Bryan were able to do was master. That might be my favorite match ever in WrestleMania history. My final thought on it is shout out to the inclusion. So much inclusion in that show. So many people got moments that deserved moments. Two black world champions on the same show. A Samoan world champion. There was so much inclusion in a show and in a company that normally doesn't have that much of it. And it was just dope to see. And it didn't feel forced. It felt like it should, earned. So, want to keep that good memory of this week and not think about today no more. So, with that said, gentlemen, tell them where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter, at Dr. Schmores. You can find our good brother Carl on Twitter at
Outsider Kervin, Kervin, here for shit posting pleasure.
You can find our good brother Rance on Twitter at
It's Ray Cash, R-E-Y as in Mysterio, C-A-S-H as in dollars.
And of course, y'all, you can find the show on Twitter at OutsidersEdgeCS. We are part of the ChairShot Media Network at ChairShot Media, where you
always use your head.
And as always, gentlemen, remember, we here at the Outsider's Edge are some increasingly less young humans doing everything that we can to make it out here in this world. And sometimes we're going to say some not so nice things, like companies that sign more than $1 billion deal and post record profits should not just be releasing people willy nilly like it ain't no thing. And other times we're going to say some things that you personally might not agree with, like all the flippy do spot fest really take you out of your suspension of disbelief. But no matter what, y'all, we're just out here chasing our dreams. And, like, you've got to respect that, because we just survived a pandemic. You think we give a fuck?
Fuck them.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.